Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Friend, who set me to be a judge or arbitrator over you?" And he said to them, "Take care. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions." Then he told them a parable. The land of a rich man produced abundantly, and he thought to himself, "What should I do? For I have no place to store my crops." Then he said, "I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, 'Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this very night your life is being demanded of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be?' So it is with those who store up treasures for themselves, but are not rich towards God."
There we go. We're good. I was thinking, there are three people here today who grew up in the Waynesboro Church of the Brethren. Mr. Maughan over here, and me, and Lori Cannell. Where'd she go? There she is, right there. Good to see you, Lori. Lori's dad passed away, what, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago? Has it been a month and a half already? Yeah, sorry to hear about that and to know that. This is my last sermon in a series on lifestyle of Christian stewardship. And we're kind of wrapping it up, the conclusion. You know, it's easy to do this when you're not in a financial crisis or a stewardship crisis of any kind. Makes it a whole lot easier. And stewardship isn't about raising money anyway. Stewardship and the topic of stewardship is about raising great Christians. I told you about that 2 weeks ago. And whether you're talking about your time or your resources or your calendar or your talents, it really is a biblical issue and it's a spiritual issue. I said there's no such thing as a non-giving Christian. And that's why I preach stewardship. When this series is over, I promise you, I'm not going to call you. Nobody's going to call you. You're not going to get asked to fill out a pledge card. Nothing like that. You're not going to be asked to do a thing. I want to talk about that for 1 second. You say, "Oh no, here it comes." No, this is what I want to talk about. I've been a pastor for 35 years. And as a pastor, one of the comments that you hear is the church is always asking for something. And I want to address that. The church is always asking me for my money. So I want to address that for a minute before I go any further. The church is not always asking you for your money. The world is always asking you for your money. Did you ever think about this? When's the last time you went to the grocery store and they didn't ask you for money? When you went to the cashier, is there any time she said, "Hey, it's on the house today"? Of course not. How about your mortgage company if you still owe? Every day, almost, in your mailbox, you get at least one bill from some organization, some company wanting your dollars, maybe a credit card, every day. And now until New Year's, you're going to be bombarded by circulars all from merchants who want your dollars. And speaking of your dollars, who is it that takes a percentage of every dollar you make? It's your uncle. It's not your father. Big brother. Big brother. Have you ever paid to park here? Have you ever been charged admission? If you've ever been sick and you've received a visit from a deacon, if you've ever been ministered to at a time of death, if you've ever been ministered to because you had your wedding here, or you got married by the pastor, or you had counseling, anointing, baptism, you got all of that and you didn't pay a dime and nobody expected you to. Nobody asked you to. Barring an act of God, I read this, the church will always be here when you are. It'll be clean, it'll be heated or air conditioned with adequate restrooms. Kendall keeps them in mint shape. A full kitchen, a wonderful gymnasium, childcare by competent people, and all of that you can take advantage of and nobody asks you anything for it. You pay taxes to provide a free education for your children and your grandchildren, but the thing is, there is a free education here every Sunday morning in Sunday school. It's a Christian education, and it's a quality education, and there's no tuition fee. I take, not offense, exception when somebody says the church is always asking for money, because the truth is, when you compare it to your bill collectors, your credit card companies, your bank and loan offices, your government, the church never asks you for anything. And yet, of all the things that you could put your resources or your time into, the church is more important than all of those things. Why? Because we are the one organization, I'll use that word, we're the one body that communicates and gives the love of God and the love of Christ to people who need it. And we do that for everybody, no exception, whether they contribute or not. So I want to talk about stewardship, and that's why I talk about stewardship. Let's go back to Malachi 3:10 a minute. Malachi 3:10 says, "Return to me and I'll return to you. Go ahead and test me in this and see," this is from last week, "see if I won't bless you and return to you in such a way with such blessing. See if I won't open the floodgates," that's what it says, "with such blessing that you won't have room for it." There are seven principles of stewardship that open up the floodgates of God. Last week I talked about three of them. I talked about the who's number one principle. Who's number one? God is. I talked about how much of mine is yours, Lord, all of it. And I talked about, will this be cash or credit principle? And we talked about the tithe. Today I want to talk first about principle number four, which is, may I think it over? The may I think it over principle understands this, that regardless of what you're talking about in your possessions, your money, or any of the resources that you have at your disposal, here's what it knows. The may I think it over principle knows you're not going to take it with you. Although someone saw a bumper sticker advertising a tattoo parlor that said, now you can take it with you. Okay? You're not going to take it with you. A woman with terminal cancer in my lifetime said that the most striking thing my disease and prognosis have done for me is that I find myself totally disinterested in things. I find myself totally disinterested in shopping. I'm not interested in money. I'm not interested in position. All the things that were important to me are not important to me anymore. There are only two things that are important to me in my life. Number one, Christ. I'm going to go away a minute. You think about that. If you found out tomorrow you were going to die, what's important to you? And she said, Christ. And my relationship with other people, number two. She said, I always knew that I was going to die someday. And now that someday is sooner rather than later, you'd be surprised at how that has changed my entire life. Matthew Henry, the great Bible commentary and scholar, commentator and scholar, some of you have Matthew Henry commentaries at home. Matthew Henry said, it ought to be the business of each and every day to prepare as though it were our last day. It ought to be the business of each and every day as of our last day. This principle understands I'm not going to take it with me. What does the Bible say about not taking it with me? Is it true? Is it biblical? Is it in the Word? 1 Timothy 6:7 says you brought nothing into the world and you're going to take nothing out of here. You brought nothing into the world and you're going to take nothing out. 10 more verses down the pack, he says, tell those who are rich in this present world not to put their hope in their money because it's going to be gone soon enough. Don't put your hope in your resources because they're going to be gone soon enough. Today's lesson that Liz read, you heard it. The guy had a problem. His problem was he had too much stuff and he didn't know what to do with it all. Do you know what the number one business in America is? Do you, Cindy? What is it? Yes, sir. It's storage. Garages, containers, sheds outside. All kind, the number one industry is storage. He said, I don't have enough to store. So I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to tear down what I have. I'm going to build myself bigger barns. Then I'll have enough to last me for many days. And God said, you fool. Tonight, your very soul is going to be required of you. Tonight, Your name is going to be on the summons when death comes to the door. And tonight, where is all that stuff going to get you and what's going to become of it? In the top of the bulletin today from Ecclesiastes, I changed it a little bit. It says, I saw all labor and all achievement that spring from keeping up with the Kardashians. It's meaningless. The fool folds his hands, and it's gone for good. The mortality rate is 100%, right? The May I Think It Over principle understands, listen, nobody goes to the cemetery with a U-Haul behind a hearse. Have you ever gone to the cemetery and seen a U-Haul behind a hearse? And the answer is no. But you can, you can't take it with you, but you can live after you die with what you have given in your time and your talent and your resource. What you have given, it lives on after you. You can live on through what you have given generously. Right before the stock market crash in 1929, it was 1928 as a matter of fact, and a very wealthy American entrepreneur heard about a Christian mission school in Liberia. They were struggling, and he donated $100,000. $100,000 as a gift to this school. Now, that's a lot of money. You think of how long it would take you to save up $100,000 before you could give it away. And this guy gave it away in 1928. It was a small fortune. You know the story. 1929, the stock market crashed. The banks went south. He lost everything he had. Everything. He didn't have a penny to rub up against the other. And he had millions before. And he never rebounded fully. And was poor for most of the rest of his life. Now, in the meantime, that school thrived. It grew, and it took on a student body and became a college, taught careers to men and women that therefore would have been impossible before that. Well, they had an anniversary celebration or a Founders Day celebration, and they invited the early donors to come and see how the school had grown. Again, this is a true story. And they invited this man who gave $100,000. We'll pay your way. But we want you to see what has happened and has this college that has grown out of your fruit. And so he went, and because he had given $100,000, he was asked if he would address the student body. He looked at that student body, and it's pretty profound, actually. He said, the only thing I have left is what I gave away. It's the only thing I have left. It's what I gave away. My late father-in-law used to say that he regretted a lot more the money that he didn't spend than the money that he did spend. And I'm going to make a confession, me too. There have been so many opportunities I've had in my life to bless people. And just when I thought I'd do it, something told me I better hold it back. I might need it. So I didn't. And the opportunity was lost. And for the life of me, I can't even remember that I ever used what I was hoarding and coveting to begin with. Somebody said, what I spent is gone, what I kept is lost. But what I gave away is still mine. Forever. May I think it over? What's the point? And then there's the stewardship principle number 5. Is this on sale? And I want to talk about that principle, and I want to talk seriously about that one. This one here I'm going to spend a little time with because it's my favorite. Is this on sale? That principle understands that nothing in life is free. Anything worthwhile came at a price. And somebody paid for it. And this principle, this on sale, squashes the idea of entitlement. When I was pastor of the Gettysburg Church of the Brethren, Fleeta Singley. Remember Fleeta? You remember Fleeta? Fleeta Singley was the oldest member of the church. She was about 94, 95. She still had her health. She lived in a second floor apartment that was only accessible through stairs. She did the stairs a couple of times a day. She was great. And I used to go to her apartment and I would visit her, and she had a single living room, and I sat in her living room, and I always sat in the same chair. And sitting in that chair, like I'm doing right now on this stool, I could look down and I could see an ottoman or a footstool. And I was always fascinated. She would talk to me and I'd stare at this footstool, and it had a peculiar shape. Instead of having, it was rectangular, but instead of having flat sides, it was scalloped like this. And I used to think, why in the world did they make it like that? And the thing puzzled me. And then one day I was at Fleeta's and she told me she made it. I said, "You made it?" She said, "Sure." I said, "Why is it scalloped like that? Would anybody have any idea why? Bob, do you know?" "Juice cans." She said, "Young man, that thing's made from juice cans." I said, "Juice cans?" She said, "I grew up in the Depression. When you wanted something, you took what you had and you made it." And she said, "If it broke or it needed fixed, you repaired it." And then she looked at me and she said, "Boy, not you. Your generation just goes off and buys whatever it wants. And if it's broken or it needs fixed, you go out and buy new." Busted. I was busted. You know, my parents and that generation, the Fleetas of this world, I used to resent their inference that my generation was spoiled and soft. But as I've gotten older, I realize there's a certain amount of truth to that. Because the fact of the matter is, I have no idea, really, what it's like to grow up in a depression like that. And I have no idea the sacrifice that my parents and my grandparents made in order for me to have the life that I had as a child or the life that I have as an adult. And I know the generation that's coming up behind me and the generation after them has no idea that they really owe, we really owe a debt of gratitude to the previous generation. Not only don't they know that they owe a debt of gratitude, but the fact is they have this mistaken notion that somebody owes them. Somebody owes them. Did you ever think about this? Is this on sale? Since the day you were born, you have owed your mother for 9 months of room and board. Huh? Is this on sale? No. It costs somebody something. And my indebtedness, number one, is to God, who has given me everything that Joel Noggle has and is. And not only that, my salvation and yours was bought by God at a very big price, his only begotten son. So, is this on sale? Heavens, no. It came at a great sacrifice. Number two, my indebtedness, your indebtedness, is to the previous generation. Everything that I enjoy as your pastor and everything that you enjoy, even this gymnasium and having this setting and this praise band and everything that we have, the electronics of all of that, is because somebody went ahead of us and paid the price. And some of them are sitting here today. Somebody went ahead of us and loved the Lord their God with all their heart, soul, mind, and strength and gave it to him full out. Okay? I've been a pastor here for 2 years, and this is what I know. I didn't come to church here in a vacuum. There were 108 years ahead of me. 108 years of hard sweat and sacrifice by brothers and sisters who gave everything they had to the Lord Jesus Christ. And I can tell you this, those first 108 years were a lot harder than the last two have been. A lot harder. I think it's a crime and it's a travesty when the current generation has neither the concept nor the appreciation of what the other generations have done in order for us to have the ministry that we have today. We are literally, how many times will you hear me say this, standing on their shoulders. Can I tell you something? You and I weren't born to be a collection agency. You're not a collection agency. You and I were created by God for giving to our potential and without being controlled by a price tag. It's called sacrifice. May I think it over? What's the point? Is this on sale? No, it's not. And then there's this one. What's in it for me? The what's in it for me principle understands this and takes it to the bank. You cannot, you will not outgive God. Whatever sacrifice you've been asked to make, God has already made a greater one. Whatever suffering you might have to make in this life, and I will make in this life, God has already suffered greater than that. Not only that, he prevailed. And because he prevailed, I will too. You cannot, you will not outgive God. Everything that I go through for his sake is for his glory and my benefit. What's in it for me believes without faltering that in this life and in the next, God will provide. A well-known philanthropist was asked how he can afford to give so much of his money away. How can you give so much of it away? Could have been Bill Gates. I don't know. How can you afford to give so much of that away? His answer was very profound. His answer was, I don't know. All I know is I shovel in and God shovels back. And he has a bigger shovel than I've got. Gang, it's number 7, the big shovel principle. And it looks like this. I actually used to preach this in Gettysburg, and when I left, somebody gave me this, okay? It used to hang on my wall in Martinsburg. But I shovel in. God shovels back. And I shovel in. But God shovels it back. Return to me and I'll return to you. It's not the gospel of prayer prosperity. It's that God blesses people who put themselves last and put him first. And trust the very fact that in the shoveling, I make out better than I could possibly have imagined to begin with. The big shovel principle says God will provide. Can we be serious? Is there anybody here today who can honestly tell me that they have never had an incident where God provided? Where God came through in a clutch? You wouldn't dare do that. You wouldn't dare because you know better. It's not a question of will God provide. God has already provided. The question always is, am I going to provide? Am I going to provide? I love this story, although I never had the nerve to do it. I never had the opportunity to do it. Tim, I don't know about you, but John Maxwell had he was a minister for 25 years before he went into leadership, speaking leadership principles. And he had a man in his church who was very unhappy. This guy was a big giver. You know, we're always concerned that we're going to upset the big givers. And this big giver was upset. He didn't like Maxwell's preaching. He didn't agree with his sermons. He didn't like what the board was doing. He didn't like the decisions they were making at council meeting. He demanded to see Maxwell. He came into his pastor's study and he said, I'm going to tell you one thing right now, young man. Until things start going differently around here, this is a true story. Until things start going differently around here, I'm not giving a dime. My money will go someplace else, but it's high time there's change around here, and it's starting with you. And Maxwell said to him, well, I understand what you're saying. I appreciate that. I'm glad you told me. But he said, you don't have to tell me that you're not giving anything. I don't care that you're not giving anything, but you do need to tell God that you're not giving. I can't imagine him doing this. In fact, right now, why don't you and I just go to our knees right here in the office? Let's go to our knees and let's be in prayer together. And you can pray to God and tell him why you're holding out on him. Whoa. I don't know if I'd have the nerve to do that or not. You see, though, too often, and I'm talking about me, I'm not talking about you, there's good things that happen in the church. There's good things that happen in life. There's big decisions that are called for. And somebody, usually in the board, sometime at the council meeting, we're all concerned, and they'll raise their hand and they'll say, but God will provide. Usually in 35 years, what that's told me is what they're really saying is, but I won't. God will provide, but really don't expect me to. Listen, I'm talking about me. I'm not talking about you. It is just human nature. If you're in the world of business, you know this is true. It is just human nature. If I can get away with it, it's just who I am. I'm going to play it close to the vest. I'm going to come in here. I'm going to sit down and soak up everything in worship and invest as little of myself as possible. And the church is the only organization who turns a blind eye and believes that's an acceptable service to God. You doing all right out there? Liz read it for us. Scripture says, give and it'll be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be poured out into your lap. Anytime I read that scripture, I always think of a box of cereal. This box of cereal is on the assembly line. We'll put it at Kellogg's. It could be Post. It doesn't matter.